anything about this creature, it is your duty to report that to the police.
You're letting your imagination run away with you. Now, I have never seen this creature that you're talking about.
Forgive me, Doctor, but I am calling you a liar.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
S4 E15 of Fanacek. Welcome to the show, the podcast. This is Bill Bixby part two, because Bill Bixby part one just, gosh, left so many unanswered questions. We started in Bill's early career. We worked our way through several of his shows that he was the lead in. My Favorite Martian, Courtship of Eddie's Father, The Magician. But now, folks, now it's 1977, and Bill is going to get another show. Arguably, the show that would define him and his career. That's right, The Incredible Hulk. Bill Bixby would star not as Bruce Banner, folks. He would star as David Banner, which is interesting. So when I was in high school, I was never a huge comic book guy, but I knew a bit about comic books. And I remember hearing a story that the reason they changed, because in the comic book, he was Bruce Banner. The TV show is David Banner. And I'd heard the reason for that was that Bruce was considered a gay name. And I was like, surely that's not the case. That's stupid. But if you look it up, more often than not, that's what you find. And according to Stan Lee himself, the TV executives wanted to change from Bruce to David because Bruce was too, and I quote, gayish. So I don't know. That blows my mind. But you'll notice in the opening credits when they show him looking at his own tombstone, it's David Bruce Banner. So they were able to work in the name Bruce. But that was a big trope in comic books. Peter Parker, Bruce Banner. You know, they always had these alliterative names. So anyway, so he stars as David Banner. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pull up the phone here. We'll get on IMDb like I like to do. We've got a lot to talk about with The Incredible Hulk, but I'll start with a standard synopsis. So the show ran from 1977 to 1982. It lasted 82 episodes. A fugitive scientist has the curse of becoming a powerful green monster under extreme emotional stress. Well, how about that? Of course, the cast, the main characters, Bill Bixby as David Banner, Dr. David Banner, Lou Ferrigno as the Hulk, and Jack Colvin as Jack McGee, who is the journalist I was trying to expose and was following him. And of course, that key line, one of my favorite lines in the whole thing is, "Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry." Oh, I love when he said that. I was a big Incredible Hulk fan. The show holds up. The show's great. So you know who was originally going to be the Hulk? It was not Ferrigno, but it was, what's his Kiel? The guy who played Jaws in the James Bond movies, big tall fucker. Is it Kiel? Jack Kiel? Hold on. Let's take a look here. I'm going to pause the show. Look this guy up. Yeah, it's Richard Kiel. So he was originally contacted to play the Hulk in the pilot. They filmed a week's worth of shooting with him as the Hulk, but he was fired basically for not being bulky enough. He was really tall, but never bulky. And they went with Lou Ferrigno instead, which I think was a good choice. But yeah, Richard Kiel's had a great career. He was in Happy Gilmore. He's most famous though as Jaws in the James Bond movies. Big tall fucker. The show really stuck to a very basic formula, right? They didn't deviate. Every episode was kind of the same in that it would start with Dr. Banner arriving in a town, getting to know some people, getting involved in their lives, and then kind of like the A-Team, right? And then shit would go down, and twice per episode, typically, he would become the Incredible Hulk. Now, the show got so expensive that at one point, they really wanted to scale that down. They wanted him to turn into the Hulk only once per episode, but they ended up sticking to their guns and doing it twice, but pretty basic formula. And of course, it would always end with him walking out of town. And that song was called, I think it was called The Lonely Man. It was called The Lonely Man. Here, let me pull it up and play it. I love this song. Every episode of The Hulk would end with him leaving town, oftentimes hitchhiking, listening to Aura, and they'd be playing this song. All right, here we go. The Lonely Man.
Thank you.
brings a tear to the eyes. He's hitchhiking out of town, never to find the anecdote, if you will, the antidote to not be the Hulk anymore. I've got some half-assed research that I'll read about the Hulk. Let's dive into that real quick. So, according to this, Bixby starred in the role of Dr. David Banner in the pilot movie, The Incredible Hulk, based on the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby Marvel characters. Now, Kenneth Johnson, the creator, director, and writer, said that Bixby was his only choice to play the part. When Bixby was offered the role, he declined it until he read the script and discussed it with Johnson. The success of the pilot, coupled with some, you know, theatrical releases of the film in Europe, convinced CBS to turn it into a weekly series. In a retrospective on The Incredible Hulk, Glenn Greenberg declared Bixby's performance to be the series' foremost strength, elaborating that he masterfully conveyed the profound loneliness and tragedy of Dr. Banner, while also bringing to the role an abundance of warmth, intelligence, humor, nobility, likability, and above all else, humanity. And it's interesting. So I loved this show as a little kid. There's pictures of me at 2, 3 years old in my Incredible Hulk outfit. I don't know how it too. I understood that he was a good guy, not a bad guy. Like, I knew that Dracula was bad, but the Incredible Hulk was good. But what stuck with me, I guess, was really the Dr. Banner part, because yeah, I even opened up Bill Bixby Part 1 episode talking about, I just always found him warm. And it's true. I'll say it again here. They talk about his abundance of warmth, intelligence, humor, nobility, likability, and above all else, humanity. That's how I remember Bill Bixby as well. So maybe it's that role of Dr. Banner that just always stayed with me, but he really was able to just humanize that part and really make it his own. You know, and again, what I love about the show is they kept it simple, right? He's a scientist, too much gamma radiation, and now when he gets overly emotional, whether it's anger, sad, pain, whatever it is, fear, hurt, he becomes the Incredible Hulk. And I hate how other iterations of this story have just like tried to make it too complicated. Like, I'm not a big Marvel guy. I've not seen any of these Marvel Universe movies. But I remember when they first started making an Incredible Hulk movie with, I think it was, who directed it? Was it Ang Lee, I think, who directed it? And it was, the Australian guy was a lead. I don't even fucking remember what his name is. But the point is, like, they had the father involved, like Nick Nolte played the dad, and it wasn't just radiation, it was some other bullshit. And I was like, I don't know, just keep it simple. And then even the comic books got really complicated. I remember as a kid, you know, of course, originally the Hulk was big and green and super strong, but kind of dumb, right? Hulk smash! Then he was able to do something where he had less physical strength, but he was smarter, and he became the Gray Hulk. So he had a job. He was a bouncer. He had a name, Mr. Something or Other, and he'd walk around in like a trench coat. He wasn't as strong as he used to be, but he made up for that in being smart. And of course, went back to being green and dumb. I don't know. They just kind of took this simple premise oftentimes and made it really complicated, whereas the show kept it really simple. Of course, he was always being pursued by that journalist, Mr. McGee, always trying to, just reveal who he was and bring it to the forefront. But anyway, that was pretty good stuff. I made a note to read some trivia here. Let's read some trivia. Loved this show, man. Such a good show. Holds up, too, if you go back and watch. Let me take a look here. So here's some trivia. The opening credits show the Hulk picking up a car and rolling it down the hill. This was not a special effect. When they were filming the scene, the steel cable that was supposed to help Lou Ferrigno lift the car broke. It was 4 a.m., cold, wet, and Ferrigno had been working 18-hour days to refilm all the Hulk scenes for the pilot because the role had originally been played by Richard Kiel, like I said. Ferrigno was so frustrated that he decided to lift a car himself rather than wait for the special effects team to try to reset the cable. That's pretty badass. When the TV series was on the air, Bill Bixby was very careful never to be photographed with Lou Ferrigno in his Hulk makeup because he felt for photos to get out of the two of them together would destroy the illusion to children and fans of the show that they were not, in fact, the same person. The tabloids of that era were always trying to get a picture of David Banner and the Hulk creature together, but were unable to do so. Lou Ferrigno was the only actor to appear in every episode. Bill Bixby was forced to miss one episode due to court hearings related to a messy divorce he was going through. Banner appeared very briefly with no dialogue in the episode and was portrayed by Bixby's stunt double. And I think I remember that. It's almost like a dream episode in a sense where he's the Hulk throughout the entire thing. I do recall that. Lou Ferrigno had been a fan, an avid fan, of the Hulk comic book series well before becoming involved in the TV series. Ferrigno has often credited the Hulk character in helping to inspire him to help overcome the difficulties he faced related to his hearing disability and other personal issues. So let's talk about that. So Ferrigno had hearing problems, right? Which will come up again here later on. We talk about some of the Hulk movies. But he was mostly deaf. I think later in life became completely deaf. And it's funny. I remember there was a comedian. I forget who it was. She was one of those insult comics. I forget which one. And she was on Howard Stern once. And she had done The Celebrity Apprentice with Lou Ferrigno. They didn't get along. And I remember she said something, although it's so mean, it made me laugh out loud. She was like, "I don't even think he's deaf. I think his ears are just dumber than the rest of him." I don't know. That's fucked up. But it's made me laugh. More trivia here. Let's take a look here. This one's really interesting. When the show was established as a hit, producer Kenneth Johnson was rumored to be considering creating a female version of the Hulk. The character would be used on this series with the intent of possibly spinning her off into her own series, just like Johnson had done with the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman. Their plan was to take David's sister, a character already established by early episodes, and have her receive an emergency blood transfusion from him. Due to the show's cancellation, the story never came to pass. However, here's where it gets interesting. Marvel Comics learned of this development and created She-Hulk so they would own the rights to any such character. The character's comic book origins turned out to be similar to the plan of the TV series. The blood transfusion is still the reason for her mutation, but she is Dr. Banner's cousin rather than his sister. So that is The Incredible Hulk, the TV show, folks. I think we've kind of beaten that one down. The show, of course, was a phenomenon. It led to toys, lunchboxes, etc. I had tons of it. I had bubble bath. I had a Hulk chair. Even today, you see kids with the Hulk fists. I mean, it was a big deal. Spawned several TV movies, and they were all sequels. So let's talk about those. We got 1988's The Incredible Hulk Returns, 1989, The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, the 1990s, The Death of the Incredible Hulk. Let's take a quick deep dive in each one of those. What do you guys say? I'll pull them up here. Bum, 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 bum. I'm so lonely. Dun, dun. All right, 1988, The Incredible Hulk Returns. Here's the synopsis. Hopefully on the verge of curing his Hulk condition, Banner meets his colleague, Don Blake, who is mystically linked to a Viking warrior, Thor. So that's right. So before we had these Marvel Universe movies, the TV series was doing this shit already. They brought Thor into the mix. I remember this movie, and I remember it being pretty shitty, honestly. Of course, the original guys return: Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno, Jack Colvin as Jack McGee. Character actor Eric Allen Kramer played Thor. If you go back and look him up, Eric Allen Kramer, you know, he was tall, long blonde hair. He was in a lot of things. He was always the big, muscular, long blonde hair guy. So now, interesting thing about this is Bill Bixby is credited as an uncredited director. Not sure why he's uncredited, but he is listed as an uncredited director. So I'm sure there's a story there, but I don't know what it is. I made a note to read some trivias. Let's read those. Lou Ferrigno, oh, this is interesting. Lou Ferrigno wears a new wig as the Hulk in this TV movie and its sequels. Ferrigno's hearing was deteriorating and the new wig hid his hearing aids. So you notice in these movies now he's got longer hair that covers his ears. That's why. This made-for-TV movie served as a pilot for a proposed Thor TV series that never went into production. So how about that? The Incredible Hulk returns. Now, the next year, 1989, we get The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. Dun, dun, dun. I believe it was jaywalking. He did something to that effect. It was a civil trial. All right. When Banner is held as a witness to a violent crime linked to the Kingpin. Oh, Kingpin. Is that Kingpin from Daredevil? Oh, interesting. When Banner is held as a witness to a violent crime linked to the Kingpin, the fugitive is helped by lawyer Matt Murdock. Yep. Who is also the superhero Daredevil. I did not even realize this. So they're bringing Daredevil into this shit now. A new Thor. Wow. So now we have Hulk, Thor, Daredevil. Interesting. Let's read the cast. So again, the originals, Bixby and Ferrigno. Who played Matt Murdock? It's Rex Smith. I don't know who that is. What else has Rex Smith done? Pirates of Penzance, Street Hawk. Nah, nothing major. This would have been his big credit, really. Anyway, that's kind of interesting. I had no clue. Is there some trivia here? Let's read some trivia. But before I read trivia, this was directed by Bill Bixby. How about that? So this time he's not uncredited. He is, in fact, credited. Let's read some trivia. Stan Lee has a cameo as the foreman of the jury in the dream sequence. This marks his first ever cameo in a Marvel Comics adaptation, though this would become a tradition in later adaptations. That's true. He's in all those stupid movies. Daredevil is dressed entirely in black in this film, despite his dark red costume in the comics. Soon after this film was released, the comics gave Daredevil a black costume in the miniseries The Man Without Fear, and was later used in Daredevil 2015. So how about that? How about that? So there's Daredevil. Now, the next year, 1990, I wonder if we'll get another superhero. The death of the Incredible Hulk. He died. Type 2 diabetes. All right. When scientist Dr. Ronald Pratt and his wife are kidnapped, David Banner must become the Incredible Hulk for one last time. Again, they're all back. Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno. I don't see any other big stars, but I am looking. Let's take a look here. Really, we're even Carla Ferrigno. I'm guessing that's Lou's wife. No good, no name stars. You think you get like one. Nothing. Directed by Bill Bixby, by the way. So he's directed again. Let's read some trivia. I made a note that these are good trivia. Let's take a look. Following up appearances by Thor and Daredevil in the two previous Hulk TV movies, Iron Man was initially intended for use in this film. How about that? Iron Man. While Bill Bixby's terminal health is cited as the factor for postponing and ultimately scrapping a follow-up movie, that was not the case. The decision was made prior to Bixby's health becoming an issue and was based on ratings declines by the film series. So I think people are just losing interest at this point. The set that was used to film the Hulk's final scene initially remained intact because of plans for a fourth post-series Hulk TV movie, which had two working titles, Rebirth of the Incredible Hulk and Revenge of the Incredible Hulk. However, Bill Bixby's death prevented the proposed installments from being made. How about that? This movie was intended to be the Incredible Hulk with Iron Man and Black Widow. They wound up using a Black Widow type character. So man, this was like trying to... So Marvel's been trying to do this for a while, huh? Work it all into a universe, and that's interesting. But folks, that wraps up the Incredible Hulk. I am all hulked out here. Now, again, it premiered in 77, so let's go back to 77 and see what other projects Mr. Bixby was working on. Well, in 78, he hosted an episode of the anthology show Once Upon a Classic. It featured like serialized adaptations of classic literary works. It only lasted 8 episodes, not much to talk about there. Again, the Hulk wrapped in 82, and Bill Bixby immediately pumped out a TV movie. So now it's 82. Boom, TV movie called Murder is Easy. I like that title. That's a good TV movie title, right? Murder is Easy. I feel like there should be a whole, like, just a job in Hollywood where you just name TV movies. Like, you just get, like, the keywords, like, murder, sin, tomorrow. Sin's murder, tomorrow, right? Starring David Boreanaz and Tori Spelling. Perfect. Get it in production. Let's get that fucker greenlit. Murder is Easy, 1982. An American computer expert meets a distraught old lady on a train, and she tells him that a homicidal maniac is stalking her quiet little village. What the fuck is going on here? An American computer expert meets a distraught old lady on a train, and she tells him that a homicidal maniac is stalking her quiet little village. So he gathers up the Magnificent Seven, and they get revenge. Wow. So it's based on an Agatha Christie novel. There you go. It was all filmed in England, by the way. So that's why he's on a train talking to a lady in her village. Because, you know, in America, we don't have villages, baby. We have cities and towns. This film was the only film in Bill Bixby's long career that was entirely filmed outside of the United States. So how about that? And again, the title is Murder is Easy, unrelated to anything I'm going to talk about. But I would say this. I would argue that it's not. I think getting away with murder is like a lost art. I don't think you can do it anymore. Like, there's DNA. Everyone's got cameras on their doorbells. Like, I mean, think about it. Even if you don't have a camera, all your neighbors do. So, like, you'd have to, like, walk into it. I'm thinking of, like, a neighborhood. You have to walk. You have to park your car miles away. Walk into the neighborhood. Do the murder. Walk out of the neighborhood. Somehow get to your car where there is no cameras around to see the license plate of the car. But even as you're driving the car away, they can track it with other cameras. I don't know. Then there's DNA. And there's droids. These are not the droids you're looking for. There's drones, I meant. I don't know. I would just argue that murder is not easy. I long for the days when you could kill a fucker. Now you just can't do it. So Bill does not have much luck in 1982, by the way. Yeah, I'm back to Bill Bixby now. Bill doesn't have a lot of luck in 82. He does a pilot that doesn't get picked up. It's called The Book of Lists. Does not sound exciting. Bixby was the host of it. It was kind of like a Ripley's Believe It or Not type thing. It is one episode and done. So one and done, it's gone. Then a TV movie that appears to be a dud. It was called I've Had It Up to Here. But in 83, guess what? He gets his own show again. Like, that's like his fifth show, man. Holy shit. We discussed it in part one. It's Goodnight Beantown. It ran from 83 to 84. Only lasted 18 episodes, but shit, man, he's a lead in another show. That's pretty fucking impressive, honestly. I'll do the synopsis again, even though we already talked about it. The romantic relationship between two Boston news anchors, and those two people were Bill Bixby, of course, Mariette Hartley. Even though this show only lasted 18 episodes, Mariette Hartley got an Emmy for it, right? Or an Emmy nomination. Let's take a look. Which one did she get? Emmy nominee. She was an Emmy nominee for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series, which is pretty well done given that the show only lasted 18 episodes. I made a note to read some trivia here. Prior to the series, co-stars Bill Bixby and Mariette Hartley had worked together when Hartley guest starred in an episode of Bixby's previous series, The Incredible Hulk. Well, how about that? It's a small world, folks. So that is Goodnight Beantown. Now, in 84... Goodnight Beantown ends, but Bixby's career does not, y'all. He does an episode of a show that I'd like to discuss. It's called Out of Control. Out of Control. Let me pull it up here. Ran from 84 to 85, 23 episodes. Dave and his friends host this zany sketch comedy variety show for kids. Anytime the word zany comes up in a comedy, you know it's shitty, right? Zany is like ancient Latin for don't watch this shit. Dave and his friends host this zany sketch comedy variety show for kids. Again, zany. Now, the Dave they're referring to, and you know this is going to suck, it's Dave Coulier. And I'm sorry. I get it. Full House. And Dave Coulier seems like a nice enough guy. But he's just not fucking funny. I did not enjoy his... This is like the 80s and 90s. And this asshole's doing Rocky and Bullwinkle all the time. And Popeye, like... And cut it out. Like, what the fuck was going on with him? I don't understand. Like, I remember even being a young kid, like... Is this douchebag supposed to be fucking famous? This was the first ever show, I believe, for Nickelodeon. Let's take a look. Yep, the first show produced for Nickelodeon. So here's what's interesting about that. So Dave Coulier, I mean, I've already voiced my opinion on him. I'm not a huge fan, although I'm, but he is supposedly the guy that Alanis Morissette is singing about, right? And you ought to know, Mr. Duplicity and all that shit. Now, she got her start at Nickelodeon as well. So I'm wondering if Dave Coulier met Alanis Morissette and Nickelodeon. Just some food for thought. Another trivia. Coulier's cut it out catchphrase and gestures are usually associated with his later hit show, Full House. But it appeared on every episode of Out of Control 3 years earlier. Well, how about that? Now we have the origin of his bullshit cut it out. I wonder where he started doing his crazy Rocky and Bullwinkle impressions that no one gave a shit about. I'm going to go ahead and read a review of this show because I am genuinely curious. Classic revolutionary Nickelodeon TV. That's dubious. This show was on during Nickelodeon's good days in the 80s. It featured Dave Coulier, now mostly well known from Joey Gladstone on Full House and host of America's Funniest People. It was basically a news show except filled with goofy segments and quirky characters. Sure, it had a crappy set and graphic abilities, but it was Dave back when he was funny and Nickelodeon when it was quality. There was also station manager Diz, who had hair and makeup like Cyndi Lauper, and her calling card was a high, whistle-pitched scream. Some of the skits on the show were It's Probably True, dealing with oddities around America, How Not to Do Things, Adult Education, Not Porno, It's Where Kids Are the Teachers, and Moments in Inventions. Diz also had a segment, but I forget what it was called. All I remember is her animated face doing that scream, It may not have been the best show, but at least Nick was being creative and original instead of pumping out the garbage it is now. And of course, cut it out. So this person is all in on Joey Gladstone and Dave Coulier and cut it out and all that shit. Anyway, that is Out of Control, and now it is out of syndication. In 85, Bixby does a disaster TV movie. You got to remember, the 70s, right, was like the decade of disaster films, right? We had The Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, Airport 75, Airport 77. I think it was an Airport 79. I mean, I'm not even kidding. There's all those airport movies. That's what Airplane was spoofing, by the way, was the airport movies. And now we have 1985's International Airport, the TV movie, the disaster TV movie with Bill Bixby. Manager of a large metropolitan airport tries to deal with the stress of his job and the various characters that work for him. Ooh. The cast included Gil Gerard, Berlinda Tolbert. Berlinda Tolbert, she was, what was her character's name? She was Jenny, I think. She was the Jefferson's daughter on the Jeffersons. Was her name Jenny? I believe her name was Jenny. No. It wasn't the Jefferson's daughter. It was Willis's daughter. Because the Jeffersons had a son, Leroy. Was it Leroy? God, I hope it was Leroy, because that sounds racist if it wasn't. I just call black people Leroy. I believe he was Leroy. She was Jenny. They got married, but she was the Willis's daughter. All right, enough of that. Pat Crowley was in this. Who else was in this? Of course, Bill Bixby. Susan Blakely was in this. George Kennedy. Robert Reed. Mr. Brady himself. Connie Selica. Robert Vaughn was in this. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was in this. Stephen Williams was in this. Stephen Williams was, he's been in a ton of stuff. I was actually just watching him in a movie. He was in Missing in Action. Was that Missing in Action? Yeah, with Chuck Norris. He was also the captain, Adam Fuller, in 21 Jump Street. Kurtwood Smith was in this. He was the dad. He was Red in that 70s show. Anyway, that, what do I want to talk about here? Is there a review of International Airport? Let's read a review of International Airport. Okay, this person gives it 7 out of 10. No one's going to mistake the 1985 made-for-TV air disaster film International Airport for, say, The High and the Mighty or Zero Hour, that's for sure. But for what it is, for what it sets out to do, which is more or less continue the trend begun by Arthur Haley's 1968 novel Airport and continue through four films, Airport, Airport 75, Airport 77, The Concorde, Airport 79, it succeeds all the same. Gil Gerard stars as David Montgomery, the general manager at LAX. Okay, basically reworking Burt Lancaster's role from original 1970 film Airport, who is confronted by any number of crises on this particular day, including a very overworked air traffic control chief played by Bill Bixby. And it goes on forever, but that is International Airport. So now, it's 1986, right? Trying to set the stage for you. It's 1986. Bill Bixby is checking some boxes. Disaster film? Check. Step-sibling incest film? Oh no, I don't have a step-sibling incest film. Let me check that box. So in 1986, he makes the made-for-TV movie Sin of Innocence. See, these TV movies all have great titles. Sin of Innocence. They just take random words. Murder. Easy. Sin. Innocence. Lost. Love. Romance. Death. But this is Sin of Innocence. Great title. Let's read about this. And it is, by the way, step-sibling porn. I wasn't joking about that part. I love step-sibling porn. Okay. That was a joke. All right. When widower David marries divorcee Vicky, David's teenage son Tim and Vicky's teenage daughter Jenny become romantically involved. This makes David and Vicky very uncomfortable and Vicky's ex-husband Andy furious. Oh boy. So they get remarried, these two, after divorces, and their kids start fucking. That's basically what's going on here. The cast, Bill Bixby and Dee Wallace as the couple that gets married. Dee Wallace has had a great career. For a while, she was Dee Wallace Stone. But for those of you who don't know, she was the mom in E.T., the mom in Cujo. She was in The Howling. I just saw her in something. I think she was in Rob Zombie's Halloween movie, the first one. I forget what character she played, but I'm pretty sure she was in that. The girl, Jenny, was played by Megan Follows. She had a pretty good career, then kind of fell off. And the son, Tim, who's banging his stepsister, in his first ever film role, and young unknown Dermot Mulroney. How about that? Dermot Mulroney got his start banging his step-sibling. Let's read a review. We got to read a review. This one gives us 7 out of 10 stars. The review is called Hidden Desires. By the way, great TV movie name, Hidden Desires. Starring... shit. The lady from Will and Grace. I don't know. Deborah Messing. Deborah Messing and David Boreanaz star in Hidden Desires. Made for TV, Sin of Innocence prudently examines the relationship between a stepbrother and sister. The very talented Meg Follows and the introduction of Dermot Mulroney to the screen are a pleasure to watch. Controlled and realistic in their approach to the characters they play and to the script. Also, an added bonus is the pairing of Bill Bixby and Dee Wallace Stone as the distraught parents who have recently married. This film gives a heartfelt look at the problems faced when two people wed and unite their families together. Also, the problems faced when a stepbrother goes down on his stepsister. I made that part up. Let's face it, that's what we all want to know about. P.S. I don't know why they don't release more TV films onto disc. Many of them are better than the big budget cinema releases. That's your opinion. That person's opining on that. Let's read one more. Exceptional made for TV movie. Also 7 out of 10 stars. surprisingly good TV movie that manages to tell a good story with some taboo subject matter without being exploitative. Bill Bixby plays a widower with a teenage son who marries a divorced Dee Wallace who has a teenage daughter. Over time, the son and daughter become close and eventually develop romantic feelings for one another. However, it's okay because they don't have vaginal sex, it's all anal. This doesn't go over well with the parents or Wallace's ex-husband. I made up the anal part. They don't seem to make quality TV movies anymore like they used to. Da, da, da. There you go. So it's, I guess like they played, so I guess it really was played to its highest level. It wasn't played for shock value, which is cool, but it is all the same, still incest stuff. And by the way, why is incest porn so popular? I'm a longtime believer that you can tell a lot about a country's culture by the porn that gets watched. And like step-sibling porn is surprisingly popular, as is amputee porn. Now, let's break that down for a second. Like, pornography is supposed to, in a weird way, supposed to be a fantasy, right? And so if there are people out there whose fantasy it is to be an amputee or quadriplegic whose stepsister fucks them while they're in a coma or a quadriplegic. Like, what the fuck's going on in this country? But anyway, it's a big thing, step-sibling porn. But anyhow, that was a weird tangent. I should probably cut that out in editing. I won't, though, because I don't know how to edit. Okay, back to Bill Bixby. Let's get back on track here. 87, right? 1987 brings us two TV appearances, an appearance in a short-lived PI show called JJ Starbuck. It was created by Stephen J. Cannell. It only lasted 16 episodes. I think I discussed it a little bit when I did my Stephen J. Cannell episode. But the other show Bixby did in 87 is a classic, a cult classic anyway, Sledgehammer. Sledgehammer, folks. This show fucking ruled. And it's weird. It's been like lost to history. So many people, especially younger folks, don't even know what this is. So Sledgehammer ran from 86 to 88. It only lasted 41 episodes. Here's the synopsis. The adventures of a deranged and dumb police detective who always looked for the most violent solution to any problem. So it was like an over-the-top satire of this maniac cop. The cast, the main character was David Rashke. I think that's how it's pronounced. Rashke or Rash. Let's just say Rashke. He's been around forever. Most recently, he recurred in Succession. He was Carl in Succession. He was, I think he was the CFO, right? No, he wasn't the CFO, but anyway, in any event, go watch Succession. He was Carl on that show. He's done a ton of things. I've got some half-assed research on Sledgehammer, so I'm going to read it because this show is too good not to dive into. So buckle up. Here's my half-assed research. Sledgehammer is an American satirical police sitcom produced by New World Television that ran for two seasons on ABC from September 23rd, 86 to February 12th, 1988. The series was created by Alan Spencer and stars David Rashke as Inspector Sledgehammer, a caricature of the standard cop on the edge character. Inspector Sledgehammer is a stubborn, narrow-minded, opinionated, sexist, and reactionary detective from the San Francisco Police Department. Hammer's most prized possession is his .44 Magnum with a customized grip featuring an engraving of a sledgehammer. Hammer sleeps and showers with his gun. It has its own satin pillow, and he even talks to it, referring to it as his amigo. He believes in shooting first and asking questions never. Unlike other comic crime fighters, Hammer is a blunderbuss that is effective and even capable of humanity on rare occasions. Okay, buckle up because I've got a lot more here. Inspired by Clint Eastwood's no-nonsense approach to law enforcement in the Dirty Harry films, teenager Alan Spencer dreamed up the idea of a police officer whose approach was even more over the top to the point of absurdity. At the age of 16, Spencer wrote a screenplay based on this idea. The script and the main character were both named Sledgehammer. Despite his youth, Spencer had already written for Rodney Dangerfield in such television as The Facts of Life and One Day at a Time, featuring Pat Harrington Jr. as Schneider. He sold his script upon the release of the 4:30 Harry movie Sudden Impact and the popularity of NBC's Dirty Harry-inspired action series Hunter. The latter property created demand for a satirical police television show. When HBO approached Leonard Stern, former producer of Get Smart, about developing such a show, Stern recommended Spencer's Sledgehammer idea. Stern knew of Spencer trying to help Don Adams by personally writing a few gags for the comedian on the set of The Nude Bomb and was returning the favor. So it's a lot about this kid, Spencer.
Spencer quickly reworked his script for a half-hour television format. HBO executives wanted to produce the pilot and suggested casting ideas that Spencer found unacceptable, such as known comedians Rodney Dangerfield or Joe Piscopo in the lead, as opposed to a lesser-known actor who would become the character. Last place, ABC was willing to take a chance on the unorthodox script. ABC insisted that the violence be toned down for the network television and that a laugh track be included, although some versions, including the DVD release of the show, do not have this track or had it removed. Spencer found it offensive that the audience be told when to laugh and was furious over the decision. But ABC agreed to cast Spencer's first choice for lead character, the classically trained actor David Rashke. Sledgehammer entered ABC's fall lineup in 1986. A little bit more here. The pilot of Sledgehammer was completed just as Peter Gabriel's song Sledgehammer became a huge hit. ABC took advantage of this coincidence by using the song in television, radio, and film advertisements for the show. Spencer said Gabriel had been willing to license his song to the series and even rewrite the lyrics, but New World Television wouldn't meet the artist's terms. Nevertheless, Spencer was happy with what would be Danny Elfman's first TV theme. So that's kind of neat. So Danny Elfman famously has done a lot of film and TV music, a lot of Tim Burton stuff. I believe The Simpsons is Danny Elfman as well, but it's kind of neat. Despite critical acclaim and garnering high ratings and a special time slot just for the debut, Sledgehammer struggled in the ratings, partly due to being repeatedly bounced around ABC's fall schedule. During the same season Sledgehammer made its debut, ABC scheduled a high-profile comeback vehicle for then-75-year-old Lucille Ball entitled Life with Lucy that was not well-received by critics or audiences. After only 8 episodes aired, Ball's show was canceled and Sledgehammer was given her time slot. Sledgehammer attracted weekly viewership of 19 million viewers who followed the show religiously through its many time slot shifts. Let's talk about that for a second. That's what TV used to be like. So this is a show that didn't make it, by the way. And it fucking got 19 million viewers an episode. To put that in perspective, I got two examples for you. So I remember The Walking Dead at its height. When Negan, that whole Negan thing happened, when they hit the season premiere after Negan killed all those people. By the way, if you haven't watched The Walking Dead, you know what I'm talking about. But it was a major, major story arc. And at its height, The Walking Dead, in its best episode, got 16 million viewers. 16 million. This show averaged 19 million. Now, here's another example. Chelsea Handler, Chelsea Lately. I hate her, by the way. But her show, Chelsea Lately, which was a hit show, averaged 500,000 viewers. 500,000. This show averaged 19 million, and it didn't make it. That's crazy. The fact that the series appealed to key target demographics also kept it on the schedule. It was eventually canceled and forgotten until I talked about it today on Fanacek. Great show. Sledgehammer. If you ever get a chance, check it out. Now, back to Bill Bixby. The rest of the 80s are basically spent making those three back-to-back-to-back Incredible Hulk movies that I talked to you about. In 1992, he does an episode of Diagnosis Murder. That was the Dick Van Dyke show there. And in 1993, we get his final credit, Blossom. So let's discuss Blossom. Why not? I like Blossom. I've mentioned Blossom several times on the show. Blossom, interestingly, is an iconic 90s show. It ran from 90 to 95, lasted 114 episodes, but it never went into syndication. Isn't that weird? Think about this show. I mean, it's an iconic show, female lead. It's about teenagers. It's a good show. It wasn't a joke. And never went into syndication. I don't understand that. I mean, that's really weird to me. Maya Bialik, later on, we get another hit show, The Big Bang Theory. So I think she's doing just fine. But let's talk about Blossom. A teenage girl living in a house run by men dreams what life would be like if she lived in a more conventional family. That's not at all what I remember the show being about, but it is what it is. So Maya Bialik, of course, was Blossom Russo. Jenna Von Oy played her best friend, Six Lemure. Her brother was Joey Lawrence. Whoa! Joey Lawrence, who would have been a child actor forever. He's coming off of Give Me a Break and all that shit. Ted Wass was the dad. Michael Stoyanov was her brother. Great show. This is a classic show. I don't know why the hell it's not in a syndication, but I've got some trivia I will read for you. How about that? Nope, that's a review. Let me pull up trivia. Bum, bum, bum. This is interesting. Jada Pinkett Smith auditioned for and landed the role of Six Lemure, but reneged on in the end, feeling she'd be miserable at age 18 playing a 12-year-old. So it almost had Jada Pinkett as an 18-year-old playing a 12-year-old. I don't like Jada Pinkett. That's a whole other fucking thing. She's a pain in the ass. So this was a show that basically Bill Bixby had been directing quite a bit of in his final days. And let's dive into that. So now we're in the 90s. Bill Bixby's at the end of his career, end of his life. He's working as kind of the go-to director for Blossom. He had been suffering from prostate cancer for some time. It was known. I remember being in the press. He directed 30 of the Blossom episodes. And then one day there was a release that made it in the press that he collapsed on the set of Blossom. He passed away November 21st, 1993. Again, he was 59 years old. He made an indelible mark in Hollywood. I mean, he had 5 shows that where he was the lead in, an amazing acting career, an amazing directing career, and just an amazing guy overall. You know, again, when I think of Bill Bixby, I think of what I was reading in the Incredible Hulk stuff, which is basically, you know, I'm going to read it again. He masterfully conveyed the profound loneliness and tragedy of Dr. Banner, while also bringing to the role an abundance of warmth, intelligence, humor, nobility, likability, and above all else, humanity. So Bill Bixby, you are missed. Thank you for the career. Thank you for all the great work and all the years of enjoyment you've given me and to all your fans. Thank you, folks, for listening. If you like the show, you know what to do. Rate it and review it. That always helps. If you'd like some free stickers, hit me up. You can email me, fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook all the time. I am Real Fanacheck. I've got a couple thousand pals that hit me up all the time. I'm on Twitter, Fanacheck Podcast. What else am I doing? I'm oftentimes sitting around hoping that you will stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacheck.